We get used to other creatures living around us and even on us and in us. Flies buzz our food, spiders make webs in our corners, bacteria in our guts help our digestion. But we might scrub our faces a little harder after hearing of the existence of face mites. Can't make the name much clearer than that. Tiny, tiny creatures that live on our faces. And since their favorite places are our pores, maybe scrubbing won't do that much. Let's find out from someone who studies face mites and many more critters living in our immediate vicinity. Michelle Troutwine is with us again. She's assistant curator and the Schlinger Chair of Dipterology at the California Academy of Sciences. Michelle, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
Sure. Love the subject area. What is dipterology?
Study of flies.
Really? Okay.
But yeah, flies and mites, the best groups of animals on the earth.
Why the best?
What?
Why the best?
Oh, just because they're so diverse. They do so many different things. They're beautiful and obnoxious and, you know, just wonderful and understudied.
Why understudied, do you suppose? I mean, because I noticed this from when we talked to you about arthropods in our homes a while back, that it seems odd that the creatures that are closest to us are the ones that we seem to know the least about.
Yeah, well, you know, as far as insects go, flies are not the most tractable in terms of kind of collecting them and identifying them for kind of regular people. So people have done a lot of work on butterflies and beetles, kind of like the beautiful, charismatic insects. But flies kind of get overlooked. They get the short end of the stick a little bit. So so there's tons of great work to be done in the fly sciences for any kind of budding entomologists out there.
You were part of that study that found arthropods in our houses, right?
I mean,
yeah,
lots
and lots of them, yeah. So was there a sudden upswing in the purchase of bug sprays and cleaning supplies?
You know, I was hoping it was the opposite. Our paper has been, you know, it's open access online, and it's been read by a lot of people, and I'm hoping what it's driving home is the fact that, hey, it's not just your house. Everyone's house is full of bugs, and, you know, ultimately, unless you have some major infestation, it's just kind of a natural part of human existence.
So the message would be relax. I mean, they're going to be there one way or the other.
Right.
So obviously it's no surprise that things live on us and in us, but boy, face mites? This is a step farther than I think a lot of people might have wanted to go, but tell us a bit about them.
Face mites are incredible and bizarre, and despite the fact that I've been studying them now for a few years, even I can't get over the fact that we have these arachnids living on our face. It's just shocking, however you think about it. And we have two species. Both of them are microscopic. They live on our faces, but also in other parts all over our body. I've only been focusing on the face because it's not as easy to, you know, swab people in other random spots on their body. But but they do live all over. But they like oil and gunk, so they really concentrate on our face.
Okay, where a lot of the oil and gunk is, of course.
Right.
Give us a sense of how small they are and where on our faces they live.
Okay, so you can't see them with a naked eye. They're as long as the width of hair, and that might be a big one. So again, you can't see them with the naked eye. So if you think you're looking at, you know, mites on your face, you're almost certainly not. They live inside of our pores, and we have two species. One of them is called Folliculorum. It's a little bit long and skinny. And to be honest, you know, when you look at it under the microscope, it's the shape of like a plug of gunk you get out of your pore. So it's very well suited to just, you know, stuffing up a pore.
And tapered on the end too, I notice.
Say it again?
Tapered on the end, too, I noticed.
Yes, tapered on the end. And Folliculorum, it likes to live in groups, and so sometimes in one pore there may be a whole handful of mites, which, again, is shocking. But yeah, they like to live together. And then we have this other species named Brevis, and it's short and fat. It looks a lot like Folliculorum, but it's kind of short and tubby, and it lives deeper kind of in your sebaceous glands, which are offshoots of your pore. So anyways, these mites all over your face, two different species, it's really incredible to think about.
Any idea how many of them could live on our faces at a particular moment in time?
Many. I probably need to extrapolate and come up with a real figure, but gosh, I would think it would be safe to say on your body, maybe thousands, uh-huh. Maybe thousands.
Thousands of
mice. Oh, geez. Maybe I should say hundreds, just to not really freak people out.
Okay. But again, the longest one is going to be the length of as long as a strand of hair is wide.
Yes.
All right. So really, really tiny things
Very
we're talking
tiny.
About here. Michelle Troutwine's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the assistant curator and Schlinger Chair of Dipterology at the California Academy of Sciences. We're talking about the things that live on us, and today's specialty is face mites. on today's specials menu. Face mites. Join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760. That's the phone number. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, do they do anything to us, or is it generally beneficial to them and not harmful to us?
So, because we found that they're on everyone we've sampled, essentially, they're ubiquitous. So we all have them. It's not, it's not something that you just get if you don't wash your face enough. And so because of that, I think they're pretty benign on the vast majority of people. There are some studies that show there might be an association with face mites and different skin disorders like rosacea. That's a common thing that a lot of people may be familiar with. But the truth is, we don't know if they cause it or if they're just, sort of somehow a part of that rosacea complex. So they kind of get a bad rap sometimes, but the truth is they're living on all of us, and on the vast majority of us they have no effect. Another interesting thing we found is that they have a very ancient association with humans. So they've been living with us since before we were Homo sapiens, right? They have a really ancient association with our species. And because of that, they've been living with us forever, which makes me think they're just part of our natural fauna, our natural skin ecosystem.
So they're meant to be there. I mean, they're just part of the whole, all the scenery, basically,
right,
on the surface of the skin.
That's right. And so in the same way that we have found that the bacteria in our gut are so important, the fauna on our face are probably, and in our skin ecosystem, are also probably very important. Now, we can't pinpoint what they're doing that's so key to our skin physiology, but at the same time, I think they probably play a role.
So how much do we know about whether they live on other creatures as well? I mean, it's not like you want to stop a chimpanzee and get a face swab, but I mean, you must have a few theories here.
Yeah, so this genus of mites is specific to mammal skin, and they
this
live on...
This is Demodex? That's the genus?
Demodex, that's
yeah.
Right. And they live on all mammals that have been sampled. Now, the truth is there's well over 5,000 species of mammals, and we only have described about 100... We as in scientists, not me specifically, but there's about 160-something species of Demodex described. And so the truth is there's so many undiscovered species. And crazily enough, we know they live on humans, but they have not been sampled from any apes yet. So we haven't gotten any from chimpanzees or gorillas. And it would be really exciting to be able to do that, because we'd be able to have this context of how they evolved and have become associated with humans if we could look at chimpanzee mites. Unfortunately, no one has let me scrape their chimpanzee yet.
So we might as well get to the scraping part, because I did see pictures of you on the California Academy of Sciences website swabbing at people's faces. Did you ask for volunteers to donate their face mites to you?
Yes, all the time. So it's it's one of my more successful kind of public science interactions. It seems like people would be so freaked out and weirded out by the fact that they have mites on their face, but the truth is people are really generally pretty excited to let me scrape their face and sample their mites. So somewhat regularly on the floor of the public floor of the Cal Academy, we'll be scraping faces.
And I want to be clear on the scraping thing, though. I mean, it's not like you bring out a Stanley Surform or something. What is it you're using here?
So we use just a tiny metal. It's like a little metal spoon, and just kind of rub it on face. Yeah, it's not painful, or we don't draw blood or anything. It's just kind of a gentle scraping, and what we're doing is probably not necessarily getting mites that we're going to go under the microscope and look for. But when we scrape a face and then put it on a swab and take it to the lab, what we do is look for mite DNA, and it turns out, just with a little scraping or swabbing of your face, there's tons of mite DNA on there. So it's a great, easy way for us to sample mites on people from all over the world.
So I'm trying to figure out what general range of animals Demodex falls into. Are these arthropods?
So they are arthropods, and they're arachnids. So they're like ticks or spiders or daddy long legs. They're mites, and they've got eight legs, but at the same time, bizarre. And as much as I said that flies are understudied, mites are incredibly understudied. They do an incredible diversity of things, and we know really quite little about them. The fact that we know so little about these mites on our face, it's just shocking. I mean, they're on our face, and how could we not know everything about them? But but there's still a lot to learn.
So were they just discovered recently, or did we know they were there and just didn't want to know much more about them?
They were discovered in the 1840s, and I just love thinking about the scientists that, first found them. It was found in a scientist found them from an earwax, so they live in our ears also.
Huh.
And can you imagine what he was thinking, looking under the microscope and seeing this, bug from his ear?
I sense a chair getting knocked over, perhaps.
Yeah. And for a long time, it was thought that we had one species, and it wasn't until, I think, the 1970s that scientists really took a better look at all the mites on our faces and realized that, hey, these are actually two different things. And it turns out, a colleague of mine did a recent study, and it turns out these two species that, again, look pretty similar on our faces are actually about 80 million years divergent, which, you know, is a huge stretch of time. I mean, these two species of mite that live on our face, you know, are as different as, you know, elephants are from bats, right? They're just incredibly different, even though they are both these microscopic mites that live on our face, eating the same thing, looking pretty similar.
Wow. So they're neighbors, but haven't been related for a very long time.
Yes. I can hardly get over it. Yeah.
Okay, we're talking about Demodex folliculorum and Demodex brevis, which are face mites. They live on our faces and in our pores, and Michelle Troutwine knows a lot about them. She's the assistant curator and the Schlinger Chair of Dipterology at the California Academy of Sciences. If you've got questions about what lives in your pores, here's the time to ask them. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So it sounds like we're just learning more about brevis at this point. You mentioned the things they eat, so let's go down that trail.
So, to be honest, I'm not sure how extensive the research is, but in the literature it says they eat sebum, right? So it's the oil kind of generated from your sebaceous glands, that kind of gunk on your face, and supposedly they eat it.
Okay, well, it's good to know that stuff goes somewhere. Never mind, I don't want to get into elimination. Let's not even go to that part of it. But wow.
So another bizarre factoid that often gets batted around is the fact they eat our sebum, but then they have no anus. So what they're actually doing with the sebum, and you know, it's not like they're like leaving little pellets all over your face, right? Somehow. You know, these mites are eating sebum. Someone said, you know, maybe they eat a lot of sebum, then they explode on your face. I don't know. Seems unlikely, but...
But we don't know that?
No, we don't know that. I need some other mite expert to chime in and let me know how likely that is.
Well, you went where I was afraid to go, which is to find out what the eliminations are. But that's good to know. They're basically sealed down in the lower unit there. So when you're at the academy and you're asking people if you can swab their faces, I mean, what have been some of the reactions you've gotten?
So, you know, some people do just kind of turn and walk away, but I think it really piques people's curiosity. And so the questions that I'm interested in particularly right now is how face mites differ on different human populations. And basically what we found is this incredible picture of human evolution, and that people from Africa, for example, have really diverse lineage and distinct lineages of face mites. People from Asia have distinct lineages of face mites, and people from Europe have different lineages of face mites. And so what I'm trying to do is get this really complete global picture of face mites on all of human diversity. And so when I, you know, tell people that story and tell them that, hey, you know, we're trying to figure out where your face is from, they, you know, they get interested and want to know more about themselves and the bugs, you know, on their bodies.
That raises the question about whether we actually learn more about where we're from by knowing where the mites are from. I mean, can they actually fill in some gaps in our own knowledge of our own ancestry by being able to trace our face mites?
Yeah, so I'm thinking that that's the great potential. You know, right now I'm just trying to build this very kind of fundamental, foundational, you know, picture of face mite genetic diversity so that we can start asking more specific questions like that. But right now it looks like, yes, we're going to be able to do, you know, ask more questions about specific, you know, ancient human migration based on the genetic diversity of these mites on our faces. And so that's super exciting. To me.
Is there something, Michelle, of a face mite denial period when you talk to people at the academy? I mean, do some of them say, shut up, they're not on me, or stuff like that?
Well, I have to say, even for myself, in the first year that I studied these mites, I was working with a team of scientists that I still work with in North Carolina, and we were all sampling our face all the time. And there's a variety of different ways you can sample your face, and so I was doing all of them. And I have to say, for the first, you know, 9 months or so, I couldn't find a single mite on my face. And I did have a little bit of, you know, denial and maybe some superiority, thinking like, you know, all you people have mites on your faces, but I don't. eventually I used this technique we've been using where we actually super glue a glass slide to our face and then peel it off. And the first time I did that, I found like 20 mites on my face. So Even I, you know, with everything I know about these mites, did go through a denial phase.
But so basically they are present in 100%. 100% of the people you've sampled so far show up with face mites.
So we actually did a study, and it was 100% of people over the age of 18. And the truth is, I think it's probably 100% of people no matter what. But I think for people, younger people, you know, their pores are smaller. I think they probably have lower populations. You know, if you think that we're colonized with these mites, probably soon after birth. And so as you get older, you probably do have larger populations. So I think it's probably harder to get a sample from children and people under the age of 18. But all adults that we sampled in that first study had them. Now, to be honest, I haven't gone on to do that same kind of testing. I just have been working with the assumption that, you know what, these guys are everywhere.
Kids would probably not allow you to super glue a glass slide to their faces.
Do that with the public often because I'm, you know, I'm always afraid I might take too much somehow. But
good to know. I was going to ask you how much skin came off with this slide too, but we'll get to that in a moment. We have Michelle Troutwine on the phone with us. We're talking about face mites and other critters that live on our faces. Basically, two species of face mites, Demodex folliculorum and Demodex brevis. You can join us at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Connie and Eugene. Welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning. Fascinating topic to me, anyway.
Truly.
obviously, you know, you're talking about how ancient these species are, and our line, of course, has been going on for hundreds of thousands of years, you know, the 99.9% of which we never washed ourselves, presumably, in any way. And so now, if you're if you have a beard or anything else like that, we shave ourselves vigorously, and then we put on aftershaves, women's cleansers, you know, for their skin, which are alcohol, etc. So I'm wondering, as we have evolved into this sort of 20th century cleaning of ourselves, how has this affected the mites, and how do they respond to all these chemicals that now are as well as the harsh treatment of shaving, etc.
And laying makeup on top of them and all
those
sorts
of things. Oh, yes, all of that, right, onto the pores that they're trying to feed out of.
Okay, great stuff, Connie.
You know, That's really interesting. We usually have people fill out pretty extensive surveys, and they do comment on their, you know, kind of facial hygiene practices. But it's really interesting that he asks it in that framework, because I haven't thought about it in that evolutionary context that, you know, the lineages that are existing now really have to be robust to our modern day chemicals. And I can only say, you know, what we've found so far is that, you know, we scrape plenty of people who have makeup on their face, people who clearly have gone through all kinds of, you know, facial treatments or cleaning habits, and again, we find these mites on everyone. And so so they must, you know, really have, they just must be robust to our modern day chemicals. Now, the truth is they can kind of be deep in our pores, and in that sense, maybe they can be protected from some of it. But yeah, it's very interesting. They're just, you know, and arthropods are tough. They've got those exoskeletons. Mm-hmm. I guess they can just make it through.
they hide in the caves, I guess, when the cleaners come by.
Yeah.
I did notice there's a realm of skincare products to get rid of face mites, and Jamie in Medford wanted to know if things can kill them. I guess the question then should be, are there things that'll get rid of the mites but not take off a layer of skin with it?
So, you know, I haven't looked too much into the products used to get rid of mites, although I do know that people who end up having a problem, so sometimes these mites can cause a problem in your eyelids. They can live in those glands along your eyelids. And again, sometimes people have, you know, problems on their face, and they are prescribed sometimes either antibiotics or kind of mild pesticide chemicals. And I imagine that you do get rid of the mites, but like I said, they live all over your body. You know, and if you just have one female left, they can reproduce, you know, asexually. And so I just can't imagine you ever get rid of all of them. You know, I think you can reduce your populations, but again, like the bugs in your house, I think you're stuck with them.
That's amazing. So down to one female, and she can regenerate herself and start all over again.
That's right.
Wow. All right. So you mentioned the possibility of the Demodex brevis, the shorter, fatter one, getting a little further into our glands and causing problems, potentially like rosacea. Do the mites have a role in blackheads?
I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. I hope not, because I love these mites and I hate blackheads, so I hate to think that they would, but maybe I'll have to look into that.
Well, I mean, obviously this is what you've chosen to do for a living, but you love these mites?
Oh yeah, I do. I do. I mean, how could you not? They're so fascinating. They're our closest. They're our closest companions. You know, whether you like it or not.
I have a hard time describing what they look like at the folks on the radio. We do have a picture right up at the top of our of this segment on the website, and it's almost like the sandworm from the Dune movie, if you can think back that far.
Yeah, yeah. And although, you know, and I don't know, because your picture is probably static, but you know, I have a few videos of them that we've taken, you know, over the years through our microscopes, and they've got these tiny stubby legs. And if you can just imagine when they get going, I can't remember how fast they move. It's slow. You know, it's like a centimeter an hour or something. But they get those little stubby legs going, and their tails kind of wiggle a little bit. I mean, they can be pretty adorable.
Another question here from Archie and Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Michelle Troutwine.
Yeah, hi. Look, I think we're not covering eyebrows here, and mites are really helpful for eyebrows. I've did a little reading that if you got rid of your mites, you would lose your eyebrows. And these things are really necessary for your facial features to be prominent and healthy.
Huh, okay. Yeah, interesting point. Thanks for that, Archie.
That's great. You know what? I'm really glad to hear that, because actually my mother, she's going to not be happy that I'm telling this story, but my mother insists that her mites are eating her eyebrows. So I'm going to tell her that, no, it's the opposite. I heard it live on the radio.
Well, this raises the question then, but once people learn about face mites, if they start saying, well, you know, this is why this is happening to me, because I have face mites.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, to be honest, I mean, I'm laughing about it, but it can be a serious problem. You know, a lot of people do suffer from, well, first of all, from real mite problems, right? Like mites like scabies or bird mites really can cause a problem on people's bodies. And you know, other people struggle with, you know, delusionary parasitosis, which may be either a mental or a physiological problem, where they really do feel creepy crawlies kind of all over them. But these mites, I think, aren't at the root of that.
Well, yeah, okay, that's good to know. And you have had a lot of fun with them at the Academy, I can tell, not just with the swabbing, but I noticed in one of the pictures that you have one of those large cutouts where it's a big image of the face mite, and a person can stick their head through the face hole and actually be a face mite for a photograph.
Yeah, that was in Raleigh, North Carolina, before I came to the Cal Academy. But yeah, we've had a lot of fun teaching people about their face mites.
So what's in the hopper now? What's your next project that we might talk to you about? We already talked about the arthropods in the house, and now we're talking about face mites. What else is going on for you?
You know, I think these two are going to keep me occupied for quite a long time. My unlimited questions about face mites, I think, may go on for decades.
All right. Well, be sure to check back in with you in a few months down the road and see what's going on with the mite research. Michelle Troutwine is Assistant Curator and Schlinger Chair of Dipterology at the California Academy of Sciences. Thanks so much for joining us again on The Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeffrey.
All right. Take care. Best of luck with the face mites, one and all.